Drums, please. Hi, it's me, Ashkenazi, your favorite North London Jewish queen. I am here to bring to you the secrets from the Pink Room.
Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, not the Stink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, it's the Pink Room. Pink Room, Pink Room, with Kenazi.
Hello, my bubblers. It's me, Ashkenazi, reminding you that the Queen is dead. Welcome to season 2 of The Pink Room, the queerest backstage since Lady Di's funeral. As you can tell, the royal family is on my mind. This week in The Pink Room, I am joined by another North London queen, the stunning Ellie Rousel, lead singer of the Mercury Prize winning Wolf Alice, punk feminist icon, and self-crowned sea priestess. Picture the scene. I'm dressed in black fur stockings, black fur waistcoat with tail, once used as a monkey costume for my nursery performance of Five Little Monkeys. Turns out my mother is a hoarder. I walk into Lalo, a club that backs onto the famous Trellick Tower in Notting Hill. The venue is seemingly jungle-themed, and before I can speak, I am whistled towards an eccentric party organiser with a headpiece and a clipboard. I'm asked, "Are you part of the entertainment?" "Well, I entertain..." "Oh, the client will love you," she says. Before I know it, I'm in front of a panel of West London mums organising Camilla's Sweet 16. "I'll send a picture to my daughter. She loves drag." I am reminded drag is officially part of the mainstream. I return to my main purpose, find the studio at the top of the venue, away from Sweet 16 concerns. I am already nervous enough. Ellie arrives, equally confused by the jungle theme. We climb the stairs to the studio and I launch into my favourite story. It was at the Spice Girls show.
Right.
And she came up to me and she was like, "Oh, who is straight and who's queer out of you lot?" And it was the rest of the Shane boys. And I was like, "I'm the only queer one. The rest of them are straight." Because I assumed that she wanted to, meet a guy that evening. Anyway, Spice Girls is happening and I'm getting my life because the six-year-old in me is like, this is the best night of my life. Because I used to watch that tour video. Do you know the one where they're filming the video for "I'm Giving You Everything"?
No, I don't know.
Anyway, so I do like the splits. And then grabs me. And she pulls me aside and she goes, "Why are you trying so hard?" Yeah. And I was like, "Baby, I'm just being me." Now. Wow. I'm not saying that that set off a series of events that led to her not going on stage at Isle of Wight Festival. But what I am saying is straight after that, she smashed a ton of cocaine and then couldn't go on stage the next day. But she was shook, honey.
Wow, that's... Yeah, okay. That's not like my...
So, welcome to the Pink Room, Ellie.
Thank you.
I started it during the pandemic because I wanted to chat to people, chat to friends, do something while I was doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my pandemic. How was your pandemic?
My pandemic was weird. I was in Brussels recording our third album. And I think we got there in January and we left in May. So we were there throughout the very beginning of the pandemic, and we were lucky because it was a residential studio, so we were kind of locked down together there anyway. But then obviously the borders closed and we kind of faced the decision whether to go home or stay there. And I guess it was kind of a perfect scenario for us in a way, because we were able to carry on making music, which was kind of a huge privilege, really, because I was able to kind of occupy myself with something fun during that time. So, I was really lucky, to be honest.
That does sound lucky. So, how much more did you add to the album during that period?
A lot. I think the having nothing on the horizon for any foreseeable future just allowed us to really take our time and not feel rushed. We're not good under pressure. So it was like the pressure was off and we could experiment more and throw more ideas out at it, and which I think you can hear, and I think it worked in its favor, but it did make it kind of intense, just having no, like, that was all we were doing, you know? So there was no, like, you know, beers on the weekend or anything. Like, so it was quite, what's the word? There was no kind of downtime. So it was all very intense in some way, but.
I guess you can hear it on the album, or like when I listen to it, I really can hear like the dedication to it and like the real intensity to it, which I think is really interesting. How would the album have been if you hadn't had the pandemic?
I think it would have been similar, but maybe just a little bit worse. Just because we wouldn't have had that. We'd tour so much. We wouldn't have that time to focus on it. I think it sounds really dense, and that's probably because we had so much focus time on it that we just threw so many things at it. Maybe it wouldn't sound like that. But, like, everything was written before, so there's no, like, pandemic stories in it or anything like I mean, yeah.
Dense albums. Mm-hmm. I do love a dense album. Which is your densest album? But not of yours specifically, but which album do you really listen to and you're like, this is dense as fuck?
Oh my God, I don't know. I've never really thought about that before, so I'm not sure.
I'm going to have to think about that one as well. Remind me. I will have remembered by the end of this, I will have chosen my dense album. So you were locked down with Joel, Theo, Joff.
Yeah.
And
Marcus, who was our producer, and Ian, who was the engineer, and there was like a studio manager.
So boys.
Oh yeah.
And I like hanging out with boys. You like hanging out with boys, but what? How have you managed to maintain? Do you feel like you need your space? How are they really caring of you? What is it like being the female presence in, like, not only that band, but also, like, in the industry as well? Like, you know, in 2015, but I can't think of other bands that had such, you know, front woman energy of that kind of sound.
In 2015,
yeah. Well, it's just that I was looking through the, like,
no.
There was that Reading poster,
yeah,
where it showed all the, like, bands of females, and it was like four out of the whole list.
Yeah.
How do you contend with that? Is it something that you notice every day, or are you so ingrained in it that it's kind of become part of your daily life?
Yeah, I think I was so ingrained in it that I didn't really know what I felt about it, because you don't have, like, I couldn't compare it to, like, to anything else, really. I've only been in this band, I've been doing it since I was really young, so I don't know. I've been asked many, many questions about that, and it's hard for me to answer with any kind of sureness or clarity or whatever, so I don't know, but I think, I don't know, it's not until maybe I speak to or spend time with other female musicians that we then start talking about, you know, our experiences. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it is quite strange. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't have much else to compare it to.
No, that makes a lot of sense. When you're so involved in, like, the ethos of being in a band, it's so hard to step outside of it. That's how I found being in a band anyway.
Right, but. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But as I was going through, like, trawling through your YouTube, there was something about the beginning of videos of the band that really struck me, was the playing with gender that was part of, I've written it down, Mona Lisa Smile and Blush and Bros. They all really played with gender. Was that a conscious thing? Also, those boys in drag look great, but someone needed to be, like, a drag. What do you call it? You know, on films when they have someone like an intimacy coordinator, you needed a drag coordinator, honey.
Yeah.
Where was my call? Not that I was doing drag then.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that was a long time ago. I mean, there was the person who did all the makeup and stuff was, you know, that was what they specified in.
But, right. it's questionable.
Is it?
Well, no, it's great. They look great, but, you know, I would have blocked the brows. I would have, you know, maybe done it.
Wasn't enough attention to detail, perhaps.
Well, no, the attention to detail was good.
Really remember Theo, they were like, do you want us to bleach your brows? And he was like, okay. And then they were like, it's okay, we'll dye them back when we finish. And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. And it got to the end, they were like, and they'd gone. And we were like, where have they gone? Where's the makeup guys gone? And they were like, they had to leave, sorry. It was like really late or whatever. And he was like, just want to play the show the next day, just no eyebrows. Like, actually, now would be quite cool, I think. But at the time, it's a bit like, oh.
Eyebrows are the window to the face. I recently got mine done. What do you think?
What, your eyebrows today?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
This is my Wolf Alice look.
Yeah.
Complete with tail. Yeah. It's actually a monkey costume that my mum made for like one of my theatre productions as a child. You know, when your mum's like, I'm going to get involved in the school production of Wizard of Oz. And yeah, but I reformatted, reworked it. Anyway, yeah, this is my attempt at Wolf Alice. She's a girl, but also a wolf.
I think it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I need to borrow it.
Oh, yeah. next gig.
Yeah, Gustenberry.
Is that the next gig?
No, but next one on that I'm
thinking
trying
about.
To...
Have you got a plan for it? Is it secret?
We've got some plans, yeah. I'm really excited. It's going to be... I mean, I need to... We're in the process of sorting it out because it feels like a big one for us. So, but we'll see. We'll see.
So the last time I saw you was Latitude. That was a big one with the coloured...
Yeah.
That was really cool. Mm. That was one of my favourite shows I've seen of yours.
Yeah, that was good because it was like... I think it felt, I don't know if it actually was, but it was one of the first festivals back after pandemic, wasn't it? So it was just quite a surreal experience.
I went a bit insane.
I went to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was so happy that you did. But, and I was like, oh my God, Ellie came to see my show. And then I talked to Sam, who our mutual friend, and she was like, no, I think she just walked in at the right moment.
No, because I saw you earlier. And she
said, this is true. But the only comparison I've got to a show I've watched like 100%, and this is a difficulty of like being on tour at the same time as when bands are on tour. The only other show I've seen, a full show of yours, was in 2015 at Liverpool Arts Club for Liverpool Sound City.
Oh my God, yeah. Right, yeah.
Wild.
Did we play together?
Well, I remember I was terrified of everything and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember walking into the band lunchroom in Liverpool, in some venue somewhere, and I could have drawn up a map. Like, you know, in Mean Girls, where they draw up like the like different tables. I could have drawn up a band table map. It was bizarre.
What,
it was like
the clique.
Yeah. Big clique. So there was Wolf Alice Superfood clique. There was Royal Blood super clique. Who else was there? I can't remember, but I just remember going to like eat in the toilet because I was that scared.
Yeah, I think it's not. I do find like backstage at festivals gives me a lot of the same feelings as I used to get walking into the canteen at school, you know?
Yeah.
It's some festivals feel like kind of glorified school trips there. You've got like, yeah, you watch, I don't know, like the micro social politics going on in the green rooms and stuff, and it's nerve-wracking.
It really is nerve-wracking. I think before I was able to like be myself, I found that an impossible situation.
Right.
Hence eating in the toilet. But I guess like 2015 and we're now 2022, how have you kept it interesting for yourself? Because let me read you a list of bands, all of which supported you. And I have a theory about this. Okay, Amberland, Lull, Splash, Peace, Men's Adventures, Drenge, Superfood, Tribe, Spring King, Motes, Bloody Knees, Midviolent, Gengar. All of them have two things in common.
Right.
They all supported you and they're all now defunct.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which means either you're like absorbing their energy. So my theory
like
is
a
that...
Death Eater.
My theory is that if you support Wolf Alice... then that's probably the end of your career.
Oh, God, don't say that. No one will want to come on tour with us.
Oh, no, That was what was going through my head this morning.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Holmes.
And I'm Matt McConkey.
And we are the hosts of Homophilia, the podcast where we talk to awesome LGBTQ plus people about the pop culture that they are consuming and loving and the love lives that they are leading. The conversations that we wish we had had access to when we were growing up. The conversations that we would like to eavesdrop on now. But we have them with the coolest people in the world. Like who, Matt?
Sir Andy Cohen himself.
What?
Michael Patrick King, Tig Notaro, Alan Cumming, Jinx Monsoon, and Vanda La Creme. Countless queens from the Drag Race universe. We're asking all of them about the pop culture milestones that shaped them as queer people, and more importantly, who they're having sex with.
There you go. It's the queer conversation they don't want you to have. We're having it on Homophilia every week on the World of Wonder Network. Tune in.
Listen to Homophilia on the WOW Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts.
In a world full of straight people, aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
But in reality, you have managed to keep abreast of all the problems and issues that come with like touring and how have you and like kept it interesting for yourself, which is clear like in like the total artistry of the latest album and like the music videos that come with it, the latest Blue Lullabies album. So how do you keep it?
I don't know really. I think I don't know honestly. Keeping it interesting, I guess I'm just, I like making music, and I've been lucky enough to have people around me who support my and help me realize my, you know, my ideas, my, you know, songs or whatever. So, and it, that kind of thing, for the way in which we work, and I don't know why this is, but it takes really long. I think our band is often like, it's kind of almost like an extension of ourselves rather than like a, it's not, you know, some people kind of, before they go on stage, they then become someone else and then they go on stage and it's a performance. I often think with us, it's more just like an extension of ourselves, which therefore it's really hard to make music because it, you know, it's part of you. So then you feel like you have to get it right because it's how you convey yourself kind of thing. And then that takes a lot of time because it's, yeah, precious. And so even when I think about, yeah, okay, God, I've been doing this for years. How have I kept it interesting for myself all this time? I still feel quite like I haven't, I don't know. It's not like a slog because I'm not like, oh my God, it feels like I haven't done even that much and that I haven't really got bored of it. I've been on tours and I'm like, wow, this is long. But it hasn't got boring. I don't think I need too many like coping mechanisms of how to keep things interesting for me because so far it's been pretty interesting without me having to try too hard, maybe.
That's amazing. I wrote, like, when I was in a band, it was hard.
Yeah.
I guess.
But I guess I'm not saying, I mean, interesting doesn't mean easy, do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah. I think it was the lack of support for me.
Right, okay.
And I don't think that was anyone's particular fault or anything, but, you know, just being out on the road and being by yourself and sleeping on floors and stuff, I think it got to me.
No, it can be super lonely. Yeah. But maybe I'm just
made of hard stuff.
No, I don't know. I think, like you say, like it's about who you surround yourself with, isn't it? A lot of it. I don't know.
You've surrounded yourself with great people, I feel. Like, and it always seems like a relaxed atmosphere. Mm. So, I'm going to read out something that you said in 2014, which seems really relevant now.
Oh, no.
I aspire to have the kind of longevity, constant progression, and good music as a band like Radiohead, or someone who changes genre and are always getting better. They're still maintaining new and old fans. It's incredible. I'd like to be like that. Line of Best Fit, 2014, Ellie Ralph.
Yeah,
do you feel... I feel like everything we've just discussed, you literally have confirmed all that for yourself, which is incredible. Now that we're in 2022, how do you contend with like the fact that there are like, if I go onto the internet now, I can buy like a cutout version of you,
or a like
like
what, like a life size one?
Yeah. I thought about cutting one out and sticking it next to you, and then being like, "Say hello to Ellie."
Wow. Okay, that's weird.
And you can buy face masks of Ellie.
Face masks.
Yeah. You know when you go like to the tourist shops and they're ones of the Queen.
Right.
You can buy one of those. There's a blog.
I wonder what picture that is. I just bought my friend a life-size Channing Tatum cutout.
Oh, no way. For who? Why?
For her. It's
for what, I mean?
30th.
Yeah, that's a good chat.
Yeah.
It's better than a real stripper, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know who's buying that.
And also there's a blog dedicated to you, photos of you in hotel rooms.
What?
Yeah. So... what? I guess like these are the things that I wish for me, but how like if I could go and buy a cutout of myself, I would buy that immediately. If I could buy a face mask of myself, or but then I guess I'm egomaniac drag queen. how do you contend with like that new part, like that celebrity part? Is that something that has changed your day-to-day, or do you still feel that Ellie that, you know, is writing songs in the bedroom?
I think I feel so the same as I did when I was in Warvalis, because I've kind of kept a lot of my social circles pretty similar, and they are not concerned with that treat like that. They don't, well, I don't know. I'm sure they care about my work or whatever, but like, it doesn't feel weird around them or anything like that. So I don't feel different, really. But I don't consider myself as famous. Like, when I think about famous people, I think, you know, very different people. But yeah, I do. Like, I'm definitely more aware of like that people take note of what you say. More so, which is everyone should do. You should think before you speak. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I definitely like, yeah, there's that kind of, I'm aware that like, I, you know, it's, some people hold on to what you say more so than you would ever want them to when you're just having a casual talk, or like, you know, even something like this, like I have to like, if this wasn't recorded, like there, you know, there's a lot of questions where you just be like, oh, I don't know the answer, but like you kind of feel it's a weird one. Like, in what scenario for someone else would this what you're going to say be recorded and kept forever? Like that kind of thing, I do, is weird. But I guess like we all have a bit that, no matter if you're famous or not, with our socials and stuff, isn't it? Just, yeah, but. I don't know who's buying. I don't think there are people buying that face mask. So I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, apart from me, here's one I prepared. No, I didn't actually buy one. I very nearly did. Yeah. And then I thought it'd be weird, because I thought the other ideas I have for my drag book was basically to dress as you, which was something I've done before when I did the podcast with Self Esteem. I was like, do you know what I'll do? I'll recreate the album cover. That would be a great idea.
Oh, yeah, that is a good idea.
It did. It really was very painful. And unfortunately, it was at a festival, and tucking at a festival, which is not something I do regularly, but I thought for the look, to try and recreate it, I should try it.
You went on tour with her, didn't you?
Yeah.
How was that?
That was the most incredible experience, because I think up until that point, I had toured with mostly men.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one female, you know, in a band, or our tour manager was female for a while. And then suddenly I was thrown in a situation where the majority of people were women. And that was a totally different experience.
Yeah, I can't really imagine.
It was when you got in the van in the morning, it was, how's everyone feeling this morning? Mm. Would anyone like to share anything? Mm. Let's bear our emotions and then get everything like that out of the way. Whereas like when I used to get in the van, it was like, I'd be a bit hungover and everyone would be just on edge and like a bit, I don't know, pissed off.
Mm.
So it was something that I was very lucky to like participate in. And I don't think I'll ever get that kind of joy again.
Mm. What? Of course you will.
Well, one day maybe, but
it was a special experience.
Yeah, really, really special. And I think, something I'll cherish forever.
Mm, that's nice.
Yeah. And those kind of opportunities are rare. Which has been like the tour for you, or the experience that meant the most that you're going to cherish from your career?
I mean, I've had a lot, to be fair, which is amazing. But I think the tour we did when we just are, I mean, this may be just because it's in the forefront of my memory is appalling, but the tour we just did last year, December, and we went around America, and I think it was the first tour we'd done since the pandemic. And there's very few opportunities you get to renew your gratitude for something. And I think I just had got pretty used to touring and doing long tours and not seeing it for what it was really. And it was just really nice to have the good part about the lockdown and touring, you know, able to do it for a while. I mean, there's no good things about it because it was terrible for so many people, but going back and doing it for us, I was very aware of then suddenly how lucky I was to do that. And everyone was very jovial and everyone was very, you know, just really appreciative of the experience, which is a really weird and kind of unique experience. And I sensed it in the crowd as well. I mean, that's quite a boring answer, but it felt special to be able to kind of refresh my view on what I'm able to do, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
And what has changed in what you've been able to do since the beginning?
What has changed in what I've been able to do? Well, I think the main thing for me, and also another thing with that tour, was like, because I was so excited to play, I know that sounds stupid in a sense, but I think before I was excited to like all the other things that came with tour, like going out and getting fucked and, you know, meeting people and stuff like that. But we couldn't do that on that tour because you weren't allowed for a start. And I just was so, I was just so focused on like, okay, how do I get my thrills then from performing? And I think I, as I was telling you before, like I've always kind of never treated getting on stage as like a performance almost. It's always me going on stage. And I think that you have to, it depends what you're into, of course, but like I definitely should strike a balance because you're too vulnerable if you go on your stage yourself. But I think that's why I was always very shy on stage, because I was like, it was totally me. And now I'm kind of like, okay, like now it's like the performance version of myself. I'm not putting on a completely different act. And I think I mean, I've been doing this for years, but I think it's only till very recently that I've been like, okay, yeah, like stretching my performance a little bit. Not that much, to be honest. But as in, like, I'm not doing anything wild, but I'm just more like, okay, I feel less vulnerable because I'm like, okay, well, this is a version of me, and like, yeah, and just figuring out what thrills I can get from just being on stage rather than like getting drunk and this is cool. It's more like, okay, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that it took me too long, maybe, to get to that stage, but yeah.
I think for a lot of people after the pandemic, there is like this twist. People have maybe remembered that it's more than just like the getting drunk fun aspect, like reminding what the professional aspect is to it, or like or like the joy, not only the professional part, but like the joy in just playing live to people. So I definitely feel that. There's an upcoming tour of yours, which I'm very excited to hear about after it happens. Can you guess which one it is?
The Harry Styles.
Yes.
Yeah.
How excited are you for that?
I'm really excited. I'm like, this is, I think going on tour with someone who, I've not done a support tour for a start in quite a while, which is, it's like a quite nerve-wracking thing, isn't it? Because people aren't there to see you, so they don't necessarily like you, and you might sense that on stage. But I'm quite excited by the fact I'm quite scared to do something. Right. Like,
yeah.
That is exciting for me. And I went to see him actually in America, and I have never experienced anything like that. The, like, for a start, it was great. He and his band were just brilliant. But the crowd, I love people watching.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to people watch in that crowd. Like, I don't know, I just love seeing, I went to a girls' school, and I'm fascinated by female friendships, and I loved watching these groups of young girls like go out together and be so happy. It was just really lovely to watch, and like kids with their mums and stuff. I don't know, like it was really nice. I like watching people have a really good time. But normally it's like quite subtle when someone's, but this is so unsubtle that they're having a good time. Like, I guess I don't know enough young people or something, because I was like, this is just so nice.
He just strikes me as having like some sense of mystery.
Yeah, well, I think actually Theo told me this, but not even talking about him, but
I could talk about him all day.
Yeah, he had quoted that Michaela Cole quote in some interview about, like, don't mistake, I'm going to get it wrong now, but the sentiment was like, oh, don't mistake, like, always being visible as being successful or something. Because I think there is, like, a, obviously this, we will talk about this all the time, but the need to put so much of yourself out there.
Yeah.
This day and age as an artist, isn't it? And he doesn't seem to do that. And I think it's, you know, it's obviously easier if you're really famous, because you don't need to, your fan base is already there, but it's still must be hard. And yeah, and I guess that's kind of like adds to a bit of mystery. Like, mystery is like, yeah, like not so much of a thing anymore. When I think back to like when I was younger, like being fans of artists and stuff, you didn't know anything about them, and you were just fed little bits and stuff, and now it's like, yeah, but it's just, I don't think that's bad nor good, you know. I don't really know what I think about it, but some people are able to stay mysterious, and it seems like he has, but not me.
I guess the last question I wanted to ask, and maybe it's a really difficult one to answer, but like, because you've been in it for so long, and you know, you've gone to this point, there is a lot of change going on in terms of who is visible and in terms of gender and identity and so on. But the pandemic has, I feel, has pushed back a little bit. If you look at festival lineups, which I think is, in terms of this industry, would be a good indicator of where we're at. But we're still, you know, we're still at 13% of artists with some sort of feminine energy or non-cis identity. Right.
13.
Yeah.
On festival lineups?
Yes.
Yeah. That's not crazy.
No, it's not ideal. How would you persuade... Because I think, you know, there's chicken and the egg, right? The industry has got to change. But then there's also that ability to persuade people to go into it. What was it that persuaded you to be like, I'm going to do this? And what would you say to young girls and, you know, people who might not necessarily fit the bill of what being in a band or being a musician is? What would you encourage them to do or to look for or to do to give it that shot?
Well, I don't know. It's hard. I mean, because it is intimidating, isn't it, to... I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I think I was always quite, I don't know if shy is the right word, but quite a socially anxious person. So that I don't really know how I've entered this kind of world as someone like that. But I think because at the basis of it all, like, I do it because I like music and I guess I feel confident in that I can do music and therefore feel like I'm, you know, all the social anxieties are secondary to that because I have less kind of, because I like the music or whatever. So I guess it's just about honing, I don't know, because then some people want to be part of the culture rather than the music and stuff. I don't really know. What advice would I give to someone who wants to be a musician? I think, well, yeah, because that's different than people who are afraid to be at a festival. I don't know. Like, you just got to be a musician first, haven't you, or a performer or an artist first. So you just got to believe in yourself. Like, all the cliches true. Yeah, I don't really know. And I feel sad because if you are intimidated by being, I don't know, or what the festival lineups look like and stuff, there's not much you can change except to just go for it, isn't it? Because it's not going to change if you're become too afraid. I don't know. But I think there are people out there who will encourage you, and you've got to sort them out, seek them out, haven't you?
Somehow. Would it be fair to say the band that you surrounded yourself with was your encouragement? From reading like interviews from the time and the way you talk about how the band came together.
Yeah.
That seems for me to be like the overwhelming, like.
Yeah, I think like I look at a lot of artists today and they're playing what I would like describe as like band music, but they're solo artists. And I don't know why that has happened. Like, I think it's for a number of reasons, like, you know, it's expensive to be in a band. It's intimidating to ask people, do you want to make music with me? But I think, yeah, being a band has, I don't think I would have been able to go and play. Well, I did, but I found it very hard to play music alone because it is a bit of a, it does feel like protection to do it with other people because, for example, like when something goes wrong, if I was a solo artist and my thing went wrong, I'd just overthink it and I'd beat myself up about it and I'd be embarrassed and upset. But like when you're in a band, you can diffuse that together. You can learn to laugh about it and, you know, you protect each other and you make it into a less of a big deal. You work it out together. So that is the beauty of being in a band in a way. And maybe if you're, you know, maybe it's, try and find like a close network of people to make music together with, because there's a lot of young artists out there that are, you know, that are doing it, or like at least they have their own name as you know, they're not in a band, they're a solo artist playing with a band or whatever, and maybe that's more intimidating. But then I'm also feeling I feel bad for people who don't have any friends, so they've got to do it alone. I basically don't have any answers. This is why I hate doing these things, because I think, like, I don't take giving advice lightly. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have a lot of advice for people. Or if I do, like, I haven't figured it out. I'm a waffler, so I will speak for hours and say nothing. And I don't, yeah.
My next plan then is to make a Ellie Rousel waffle iron. And I'm just going to get a printed face of Ellie and waffle mixture. And we'll make hundreds of Ellie waffles.
Okay, yeah.
And then we can have the Ellie waffler. Mm. But people do hang on your words because you have done it.
Yeah, well, don't hang on anything I just said. But I don't think it meant anything.
I think it means a lot. Like when people are like to me, oh, so, you know, how was coming out, being in a band and, you know, being in the industry and being gay, and I was like, I just did it. But
right,
for people to hear that, I think is enough to
really,
yeah.
But then I think if you just feel like you really can't, then it's like, oh, well, then I won't be able to because they just did it.
But if you can show people that it can be done, then that's I think for me, that's overwhelmingly, like, you know, I don't feel that I have the right to be like, well, this is how you do it. But it's kind of when everyone is like, well, for me to say to someone, you can do it, that's usually enough for, like, because it means that much for them to hear that it's possible.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But then also it's very complicated and very hard and blah, blah, blah. This has been wonderful. Mm. Thank you so
thank
much
you for
having
coming.
Me. Have you got... anything upcoming that you'd like to share with the world? What's next? Harry Styles.
Mm.
Harry Styles tour.
Yeah, we've reworked some of our songs, made them into lullabies. I don't know why.
I'm really enjoying the documentary you made of that.
Yeah.
It's really cute.
So that's coming out soon. And then, just touring. I wish I had something more interesting to promote for you, but that's about it for me. Touring.
That sounds like fun. Something's going on outside. Is it coming through the speakers?
Yeah. Boop,
boop. Well, thank you for joining me in the Think Room.
Thank you,
Ben. It's been an absolute honour to have you, and I can't wait to see you perform again.
Likewise. Especially in this.
Oh, well, you know, if you ever need a wolf, Alice, I will appear from side of stage.
Someone's ever said that to me before.
Have they not?
No. I'm not quite sure what it means, is there, but I mean...
Well, I spent the whole of yesterday being like, what does Wolf Alice mean? And like, I was like, do I go as Little Red Riding Hood or do I go as the granny or do I like combine the two? And I came up with this mashup.
I love it. I do.
Thank you. And I've got a right old hoof on. same as these shoes, honey. These are incredible. Go on, give me the look. So
I can't stretch. Do
it's a thin heel. How do you do that?
I don't know, to be honest. I was scared coming up these stairs. I think this is these actors are kind of
the buffer. Yeah. And the leather jeans. Mm. And it's an Urban Outfitters top.
No, it's not.
Damn it! I'm trying to get better at my fashion spotting. Right, let's get drunk.
Okay.
We go downstairs, somewhat shakily, and order the largest white wines we can. The consternation of mothers ignore my presence. I tap the leader on the shoulder. Did you want me to stay for the party tonight? I ask. Oh, I'm afraid the client has gone with someone else, she replies. Was it the beard? She nods. I'm again reminded that drag is officially part of the mainstream. Ellie rushes off to the Harry Styles show, and I venture into the open air, cigarette and wine in hand, and release the pent-up energy back into the atmosphere. A car pulls up alongside, and the window rolls down. How much? The man inside asks. Sorry? How much? Oh, I'm immensely flattered, sir, but not today, thanks. Suddenly, his energy changes. You disgust me! Why the fuck are you wearing that? And rolls up the window. I let out a shout as the tyres screech away. Was it the beard?
Thanks to Ellie Rousel for taking the time to speak to me, and to Lalo for the use of their studio. The Pink Room is a World of Wonder production.